Welcome to another episode of Army Real Talk, a segment of AUSA's Army Matters podcast. I am Mzinga Curry, Director of AUSA's Education and Programs Directorate, and I am joined with my co-host, Lieutenant Colonel Brittany Lloyd, AUSA's current Army Fellow. We have a special episode for you today, listeners. Today, we will hear from former co-host of Army Real Talk. You know, AUSA started its podcast series in 2019, releasing over 100 episodes. And I have had an opportunity to host about 20 of those episodes, along with AUSA's Army Fellows for the Army Real Talk segment. Today, we bring back former host Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Irby and Major Brad Cooper to catch up and hear what they are doing today. Lieutenant Colonel Irby was the AUSA Army Fellow from July 2019 to 2020 and is now working in the G3 as a budget officer assisting with the management of the Army's $30 billion annual training budget. Wow. Major Cooper was the AUSA Army Fellow from July 2018 to 2019. Following, he joined the Army Talent Management Task Force, which is the organization that is working towards a comprehensive reform to continue to meet the current and future needs of the Army. Gentlemen, it is great to have you join us today.
Mrs. Curry, I couldn't agree more. What a great opportunity to have the whole family back together. Both Eugene and Brad were instrumental in helping me transition to the AUSA Fellowship. I'm excited for today's discussion, and welcome back, guys.
Yes, welcome back. So many of our listeners are really familiar with your background, but for those who are not, could you all both share a little bit about yourself? And Lieutenant Colonel Irby, let's start with you.
All right, thank you. Well, I first enlisted in the Army Reserve as a 35 ECHO CompSec maintenance repairer. After graduating college with my bachelor's in finance, I began working at an investment bank in Atlanta, Georgia. Once 9/11 happened, I was compelled to serve more and decided to go green and gold and commission as an active duty officer and join the fight on terrorism. This was a path I first thought was going to last only 3 to 5 years, but here I am 20 years later and still having an exceptional opportunity to serve our great nation. I truly believe my best days of service are still ahead of me as well. Initially, I served as a field artillery officer and later had the chance to branch transfer to finance, and I became an Army comptroller and resource manager. The Army has provided me the experience of 7 combat zone assignments and the opportunity to manage budgets and contracts in excess of $30 billion, supporting operations in over 50 countries. Currently, I'm serving as the budget officer on the Headquarters Department of Army G357 staff, assisting with the crafting and management of the Army's enterprise training budget of $30 million.
Major Cooper, please share a little bit about your background.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ladies, for the introduction. It is awesome to be back. So as some of the listeners know, that I am a 2004 commissionee in the Logistics Corps, GO Ordnance, 4 deployments underneath my belt, and I also spent most of my time in 3rd ID, Rock of the Marne, and 25th ID, Tropic Lightning. After my stint, as you already mentioned, with the AUSA as a fellow, I went over to the Army Talent Management Task Force, where I reside now, and I'll probably stay on the task force until I PCS or get selected for command, fingers crossed, hopefully here in like the summer of 22.
Remarkable. And we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that in a few seconds. So gentlemen, again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. So now I get to ask you a couple of questions along with Lieutenant Colonel Lloyd. So first, Lieutenant Colonel Irby, as we know, you left AUSA in March. It was sad for us, but of course, exciting for you to transition back into the job working your finance operations with the Army G3. Tell us a little bit about your new responsibilities and how things are going.
All right, thank you. So let me start by talking a little bit about the PEBS process, or PBB&E, which stands for Planning, Program, Budgeting, and Execution. This is the process that the Department of the Army uses to figure out how to best allocate their resources. It's an annual process that serves as the framework for the Army senior leaders to decide which programs and force structure requirements to fund based on strategic objectives. I'll shortly just touch on each one of the 4 categories. And I'll do it in reverse order because it's a little bit easier to explain. So you have the execution phase, which is the current year execution. So for now, we're in FY21. So this is the money that we're actively managing and resourcing the warfighter right now. The budget year is the one that is formulating right now and being vetted through Congress, and hopefully will be appropriated for us the next fiscal year in FY22. The planning and program phase I would like to describe as creating a five-year investment plan, our strategy for the Army. You will hear this also referred to sometimes as a FYDEP, which is the Future Year Defense Program. So we are currently working on 23-27. So I work with a team of professionals led by the Director of Training, Brigadier General Scott Nauman, and we help to formulate the Army's training budget. All aspects of the PE process are very important to our directorate, but I would say the primary one, of course, is going to be the planning and programming phases of that five-year plan, or that FYDEP I talked about earlier. We have five portfolio teams: operational, network, institutional, mission, and simulations, that work with all the commands throughout the Army to consolidate, analyze, and review projected requirements over that five-year period. This deep dive review and process takes a greater part of a year to execute. Once this is completed, the process essentially creates the POM, the Program Objective Memorandum, which is the recommendation sent to the Army senior leaders and the Office of Secretary of Defense for final review and approval. Once approved, that shapes the Army resourcing strategy going forward.
Thank you for that, Eugene. That sounds very complex and a lot more work than I'm willing to undertake, so congratulations and good for you on that one. I would like to say, though, that training is critical to the success of the Army and preparing our soldiers to complete the mission and do what they need to get done. And since you have an opportunity to work in the training section and manage a $30 billion budget, can you talk about some of the new initiatives and changes that the Army is resourcing with all of that money?
Sure. Thank you, Brittany. First, I would like to just talk about the $30 billion. It does sound like a lot, but that number goes towards supporting the entire Army, the total Army training enterprise, from the planning phase to the execution all the way down to the AARs. Every new weapon system, piece of equipment creates a new training requirement. The same happens when we introduce upgrades and enhancements to the current system. Also, this incorporates training of all personnel from basic AIT, NTC, CTCs, and even large-scale international training events such as Defender Europe. I think the elephant in the room when we talk about new initiatives and things that the Army is doing would be something that's referred to as REARM, and it stands for Regionally Aligned Readiness and Modernization Model. REARM looks how we balance our current force structure and training that force structure against the need to create the time necessary to field new equipment and become proficient on that new equipment. REARM also strives to establish predictable and more manageable operation tempo for units by adjusting policies and training requirements to provide leaders additional time to invest in their people and align the force to win against current and future adversaries. To underscore the importance of this, I would like to use a quote that the Czech Army made during the last AUSA annual conference. He said, "Just because someone can carry the weight doesn't mean that it isn't heavy." Another elephant in the room is the rebalancing from legacy operations in the CENTCOM area of responsibility to expanding within the European and Pacific AORs. I won't go into too many details on each one of these for the sake of time, but there are a lot of things that's going on right now, currently, and that are on the horizon that will improve operational readiness in the theaters and further strengthen our military-to-military partnerships there.
So I love that quote, and it really makes me think about the large budget and responsibilities that you, as well as your team, have to manage. So that is really fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Moving on to Major Cooper, Army talent management, you know, is one of the hottest topics, you know, the Army is talking about within as well as outside of the Army. And we are very much looking to learn more. So can you share a little bit of information about what you are doing or what you have been doing, as well as what the task force has been doing in general?
Yes, ma'am. So the Army Talent Management Task Force is within the Chief's number one priority, and his number one priority is people, like we all know. The task force is making groundbreaking changes that affect the way the Army manages their people and their talents for the current and future Army formations that we'll be dealing with here up and coming. So some of the current initiatives that the task force is currently working on that I'm sure some of you guys have seen, but the hot ones that are out on the street right now are under assessments, we have the CAP program, and CAP stands for Commander's Assessment Program. And there is two assessments broken down underneath that, and we just piloted one for the enlisted as well, too. But the first one that came out in January of 2020 was the first one. It was BCAP, Battalion Commander's Assessment Program 21, where it selected about 750 major promotables and lieutenant colonels, and they all went to compete for command. And then back in August and September of this year, we did our first CCAP, which is the Colonel's Command Assessment Program, and that was for the lieutenant colonel promotables, and the two go for brigade command. Both of them went through the same aspect, you know, a five-day assessment that tested their physical fitness, that tested their writing, that tested their cognitive, non-cognitive assessment, and so on and so forth. So that's what the CAP program is doing within the Talent Management Task Force. And then also we just piloted on the back end of this previous BCAP that myself and Lieutenant Colonel Irby just went through. They piloted the SMAP, which is the Sergeant's Major Assessment Program. So they're looking at running the Sergeant's Majors through that to select them for battalion and brigade command sergeant majors is what they're looking for. Another thing that a lot of us are familiar with, like myself and Colonel Lloyd and Colonel Irby are with, we're familiar with the ATAP, or the Army Talent Alignment Process. And this is basically, in short, people call it the AIM-2 platform, or they call it the marketplace, but it's really the ATAP. That is basically where we select our jobs, and that's basically where we can have a upfront and honest conversation interview process with the unit that we're trying to go to, and we can manage our career, basically. And it's fair game within the marketplace now, and I'm pretty sure Colonel Irby and Colonel Lloyd can attest that all jobs are there, all jobs are open. You can see all the black books. Because years ago, it used to be the branch would be like, okay, you're up for PCS, you're getting ready to move, you only have three choices. So it's like, hey man, that's not cool. So now the ATAP makes you available or shows you all the jobs that you're available for. And then you can have the control and do the interview process and do the due diligence. You can deviate from your career field a little bit, or you could stay within your career field. It depends on what you want to do. So that's the ATAP. So the ATAP 2102 is currently going on. It should be closing here in about a week. But they roughly have about 15,000 soldiers currently right now in the ATAP process that will be potential moves for next summer. Another thing within the ATAP program is the brevet. And the brevet's real cool. It's a great program. Currently, this is one of the NDAA 19 authorizations that Congress gave the Army, was to put the brevet out there. And they authorized us about 750 brevet positions, and the Army is slowly working towards to have those 750 out within the marketplace or out within the units. Well, what the brevet does, and I'll use Colonel Lloyd as an example, she's a military police officer. If she sees a job that is a 06 position at USERPAC or one of the ASCCs, she can apply for that 06 position, and if it's a brevet position and she is selected for it, she will go into that position, and as soon as she starts that position, she's automatically promoted to 06, and she will start getting that pay as an 06 as well, too. But if she has not met her normal board process for 06, and she's about to come out of that job, she'll revert back to an 05, but most of the time, the folks that go into those types of positions are, you know, their board's meeting within that year, and it's more than likely that they'll get selected for the next higher rank. So brevet is looking great. I know there's currently like 73 available brevet positions in the 2102 ATAP cycle. Don't quote me on the number, but I think the last time I heard it was like 73. So that's what's going on with the two big hottest things. Another big one is the new one that just started a couple months ago back in August. It's the TBCA, or it stands for Talent-Based Career Alignment. And this one is to retain the talented 2,000 officers, or what General McGee and the chief like to say is 80% of the top 50% in the Army. And so we're looking to retain these captains is what we're looking to retain. So there's more options and predictability for the officers with the higher levels of talent, basically. So we're looking to identify these talents early and then retain them all the way up until, you know, hopefully they can stay in, you know, for their 20 years or so. Some of the pilots just started with that back in August, so they've already reached out to the Captain's Career Course within the maneuver and the field artillery folks, and then they've just started, you know, Pilot 2, which is identifying, you know, folks from the Signal Corps and the cyber community, And I think they're going to be starting a third pilot here with the engineers and so on and so forth. But we also have some warrant officer initiatives going on that we can't forget. And even though some of the talent management task force stuff is focused on officers, we can't forget about our warrant officers as well, too. So there's a bunch of initiatives that's going on with them. Another just quick one that was given to us in the NDA 19 was the direct commissioning authority. So currently, basically what it says is you can direct commission outside civilians coming from the civilian sector all the way up from second lieutenant all the way up to 06, depending on what their skill set is or where they're coming in with their certifications or degree or so on and so forth. Currently, as of February of this year, they've direct commissioned 12 cyber officers, 9 civil affairs officers, and 2 force management. And I think they have 3 more cyber officers that are getting ready to be direct commissioned in. And I don't know the ranks that they're getting commissioned in. I know a couple of them were like majors, a couple of them are captains, but they're going directly in as that rank. So, I mean, there's just a ton of stuff going on that the task force is pushing forward and stuff. And if listeners want to know more, just please go to the Talent Management Task Force website at talent.army.mil, or just Google Army Talent Management. They'll come up and you'll see a whole lot more stuff of what the task force is working on.
Well, that's awesome, Major Cooper. So, you know, I'm a civilian, so you might have to break this down a little bit more for me. But it sounds like Army Talent Management Task Force is focused on all soldiers, active from the officers, warrant officers, as well as NCOs, not just officers. And it's also not just looking at the top 5 or top 10%. It's looking at every soldier, every area. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. So we started with the officers, obviously, and the warrant officers as well, too. We just kind of really started really getting into the enlisted talent management with the NCOs. Some things I just want to mention with the enlisted talent management, we just did the pilot for the FMAP. We roughly had about 28 participants compete at Fort Knox through the 5-day assessment program, just like they did with the majors and the lieutenant colonels. And they also are going to start the First Sergeant Talent Alignment Assessment, or First Sergeant TAA. And there's a pilot going on that's going to start on the 7th through the 11th of December. And about 15 expected to compete with that. That's basically, they're going to do that at Fort Bragg, you know, because the first sergeants are the key down at the tactical unit. They are the ones that oversee the soldiers. We all know how important first sergeants are. And we've all known from experience, especially myself and Colonel Lloyd and Colonel Irby, you know, we've seen some good and we've seen some bad first sergeants. So this talent alignment process is going to help find the better first sergeants and make that pool of first sergeants readily available to go into the company commands. And then as far as with the ATAP process, we're also doing that with the enlisted as well, too. It's going to open up to the E8 population or the master sergeant population in December of 21. Like some of the E6 through E8, they're doing the assignment satisfaction key or ASK EM. That cycle opened up on 2101 cycle here in November. And those are some of the stuff that they're doing for the enlisted. So the long answer to your question is yes, we're doing a ton of stuff for all 3 of the areas within the Army. And not only are we doing it for active duty, we're also looking at multiple things within the other combos 2 and 3 within those National Guard and Reserve as well, too.
Wow, Major Cooper, thank you for that. And that's excellent and exciting times, not only for the Army, but also for your task force and the team that you're working with. Congratulations to both you and Lieutenant Colonel Irby on completing the Battalion Commander Assessment Program. That's awesome. And although you can't reveal the nitty-gritty details, can you kind of go into a little bit more detail about how this supports not only the Talent Management Task Force and what you guys are getting after, but also the Chief Staff's number one priority, which is people?
Colonel Irby and I, we just got done with the Battalion Commander's Assessment Program 22. And it's really 22 is because we may possibly be going into command in FY22. That's what it stands for. So the 5-day assessment at Fort Knox, day 0 kind of counts as one of the assessments because you got to do height and weight. So you basically have to do a height and weight. You have to do a writing exam. You have to do a physical fitness test. And then you have a double blind interview process is what you go through. It was eye-opening. Some things of it was tough mentally and tough physically. It was probably the hardest APFT I've ever taken in my 18 years. I'm not saying that all my PT tests have been too standard within the last 18 years. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I trust my NCOs that have been grading me for those times. But this was like the fairest, consistent one across the board. I mean, I think I probably did 60 push-ups, but I only got counted like 50. Not only was it mentally tough, it was physically tough because it was to the standard. Like I said, and again, you know, not saying my other ones that I've been graded on, but you think back, you're like, wow, some NCOs gave me some back in the day and some NCOs didn't. So like I said, it was fair and consistent across the board for the entire Army. And I'm pretty sure Colonel Irby will agree with me on that. But not just the PT test, but you also had to take a writing exam because, you know, let's admit it, not very many officers field grades within our careers right now are great writers. I mean, there's some that are, but a good majority of the pool, in my opinion, aren't very good writers. So the Army wanted to test us on how to be a good communication, and writing is part of it. And then we had to do the interview process, and it's a double blind interview. So you're on this side of this curtain and you can't see through the curtain. And on the other side of the curtain is a panel of some general officers and some former brigade commanders and a nominative sergeant major. And a couple of them are all voting members, but they're going to ask you questions, leadership questions, based off your experience. And you sit there and you have an interview conversation with them. The good thing about it is they try to take as much bias out of the scenario as possible. So they don't see that I'm in uniform and they see all my badges on my chest and they don't know me by my name. They don't see my officer record brief. They don't see anything. They just know me by my candidate number. And the interview is the last thing you have to do. So they see all of the assessments and your scores that you've done the last 4 days. And so they take as much bias out of the process. And then when you're complete, you go do an out brief. And there's a psychologist that gives you an out brief. And they basically tell you, you know, here's where you kind of rack and stack. They can't tell you that if the panel voted for you to either be selected for command or not selected for command, they don't have that information, but they kind of tell you where you fall in line with your assessments and stuff. And I'll have to admit, it was very humbling. There's some stuff that I kind of already knew about myself, and there's some stuff that I learned about myself. And then my psychologist that outbriefed me, he was like, hey, you're good on this positive aspect, but here's what could happen if you continue to do this for a long period of time if you're in command, so on and so forth. So he gave me kind of both sides of the coin there and, you know, gave me a good aspect of holistically of who I am. But we won't know. So now that that's done with, BCAP 22 just ended around the 17th of November. There's 12 cohorts that went through it. Roughly about 740 major promotable lieutenant colonels went through it. And we probably won't know results until probably either the end of December or probably early into January. But right now, that's really all I know, and that's all I know.
One other piece that I would like to add into there is the peer reviews and your subordinate reviews. So there's a number of surveys that are sent out, and you get honest feedback from the people that you have worked with throughout the years that have worked for you and you have worked with. And that's very telling. It's, I remember when I had to sit down with the psychologist, the psychiatrist, whatever, the psych team, and they were telling me how wonderful I was, which I told them I knew this already, but no, I'm just kidding. they did give me a positive, very positive readout on what people said, percentage-wise, of the people that said what they thought of me as a leader and if I was ready for command. So that was one of those things where you sometimes you think you're good, but you really don't know what people say when they're just talking within their groups. You know, I've had commanders that I know may have been rough around the edges, toxic, and just didn't know it. So when you get those assessments that come from the people that you work with and they say, you know, you create a good environment, that you're competent, and that they would serve under you or with you as a commander, it does say a lot.
If I could just caveat for one thing. So the ASET that Colonel Irby just described, which is the Army Commander Evaluation Tool that, you know, with the peer and subordinates, that's not like our normal old 360 that, you know, Colonel Lloyd and Colonel Irby and I were used to. Because in the 360, you can go in and choose who you want to have them speak about you. ASET is, you know, it goes out and, you know, there's an algorithm up at the HRC and it goes out and it finds folks that you've worked with, it finds folks that you've rated, it finds folks that are your peers and subordinates. And it's totally like, I had no clue who got the ASET on me. Even in our outbreak, they don't even tell us, you know, they're just like, hey, this is what folks said about you. And it's very humbling and I totally agree. But overall, BCAP is here to stay. I mean, even CCAP, and I even think the FMAP is here to stay, because it's a much better way to identify leaders that are better at writing, better at physical fitness,
better at communicating and definitely less toxic. So that's, you know, like I said, I'm a huge fan of the CAP process with all three of the BCAP, CCAP, and the SMAP.
It sounds like they are focused on the total individual. So I think that is awesome. And then, of course, I have to put a plug in talking about writing and soldiers' ability to write. We want the writers to send us papers and check out AUSA's writing program. Yes, I had to throw that out there.
It's a good plug, man. It's a good plug.
Major Cooper, thanks. That's a lot of good news. And I think that definitely gets after the chief staff, the Army's number one priority, people. He says, if we take care of people, then everything else follows. And when you have good commanders that care about their people, can communicate not only their intent and their guidance and their desires for their team, then people are more willing to follow, which ultimately ends up with a better work environment and motivated soldiers to do the job. So I agree with you 110%. Let's find the right leaders and let's put them in charge of our soldiers. So thank you. Okay, this next question is definitely for both of you guys. Since you are my predecessors and you are the experts at this podcast thing, I'd like to hear from you both, which was your favorite podcast episode that you got to record with AUSA while you were the Army Fellow? And Major Cooper, we'll start with you.
Oh, wow. So first off, let me just, I'm not bragging or anything, but the podcast started with me. And it was the brainchild of your current boss, Ms. Nzinga Curry. But
wait,
I remember
now. Don't get me in trouble now. It was the brainchild.
General Swan and the rest of the vice presidents, they all had a hand in it, man, but it was your baby. But I remember the day that you were kind of struggling with it, and I walked past your office to go down and talk to Mr. Roper about something I was writing. You were in there, I think you were in there with Carrie, and you guys were trying to talk about this podcast thing. And then I turn around, I talked to Mr. Roper for a little bit, and I turn around and walk back, and you like stop me, and you're like, hey, Brad. I was like, yes, ma'am. And you were like, how do you feel about talking on a podcast? And I was like, well, my mama said I do have a face for radio. So what are you trying to sign me up for? She's like, oh, it'd be, and then, ma'am, you can sell ice to an Eskimo. You're like, oh, it'd be really great if we had the Army Fellow on there. And, you know, we started this podcast. So I remember that day, like it was yesterday, you know, we're starting the whole thing. And you were very excited and the entire team's very excited. But it was, I wouldn't say it was a struggle, but it took some time to find, you know, some great episodes and stuff. And some ones that I recall that I really liked was the one we did with the other side of the Army. So everybody knew what normal folks do in the Army, but there's also those specialty folks. Like we interviewed the diver when we went out to LANPAC and got to interview the diver and all the cool stuff that he does for the Army. And there's only like 7 dive teams in the entire Army and all the certifications that they go through. And it was just amazing to hear that NCO. And then the esports with electronic gaming, and you and I were kind of weary about it as well too, until the Sergeant First Class came in and was like, hey, we're doing all this. We're reaching the Z's audience. And then I follow those guys on Facebook and Instagram and they're just kicking butt. And there's a lot of folks, like even my oldest, who's a huge gamer, even follows them. So it's like they definitely reach out to this new Generation Z audience. And then the captain that came from the Warrior Fitness team, which is really cool. And I follow them as well, too. Of course, I need to get back in the gym myself, but, you know, she was motivating me for a little bit. But then the other one that I have to say that I really liked was when we had the former company commander, the former battalion commander, and then we have Steve Conoco in there, who was a former first sergeant before he retired. And we just talked about leading soldiers and kind of gave some tips. And they talked about their stories of the different things that they dealt with when it came to a certain situation, either when a soldier was having a hard time or when a soldier was getting in trouble or when they were helping out with their families and stuff. And it was just a good thing just to sit down and just hear it from those former commanders, because it came out at a really good time because the command lists were coming out, especially for the battalion commanders. And I remember speaking to some of the battalion commanders that were going in. They heard the podcast and it kind of gave them some good ideas and stuff that they wrote down. But those were, I have to say, were my two favorites when I was the fellow and doing the podcast.
Well, you just sharing that brings me back, you know, it's like I was going back down memory lane, and I do remember pulling you into the office and having that conversation. And whoo, yes, Carrie, LeSharon, and I, we had an interesting path as we worked towards building this podcast, this AUSA Army Matters podcast. But I have to tell you, Major Cooper, you rocked. You absolutely rocked. You took hold of it. You were like, ma'am, I'll do what needs to be done. And you did that and more. And not only were you a great co-host as far as speaking and communicating well and all that, you also worked towards connecting us and just being that excellent Army fellow. So I appreciate that. So good.
I appreciate that too, ma'am. Now we have to get off this podcast stuff and start doing video podcasts. So I'm just waiting for AUSA to make that next leap.
Cut it out. I don't know if we're ready for that yet.
So General Swan, sir, if you're hearing this, video podcaster.
Uh-oh. So we're going to quickly switch over to Lieutenant Colonel Irby. Please enlighten us. What were your favorite podcast episodes?
Well, you know, I just want to say, you know, I support the video podcast idea also. Along with
yes.
Live. It needs to be live.
Yes, live too.
Ooh,
I agree.
Real time.
Ooh, I'm a little nervous there. Okay. We'll look into it.
All right. Oh, let's see. We had a bunch of really, really good podcasts and loved each and every one of them. Learned so much, and it was great doing them. I think there's a couple that just really stand out to me. The first one was Spirit of America. That was one with Mr. Hake, who is a very successful businessman that saw a need that the military and other defense organizations needed overseas, assisting with building better relationships in some very austere environments, Iraq, Afghanistan, things of that nature. And he started that nonprofit, Spirit of America, to lend that support. And to hear that story and then interview him in his office, where we see that he is running the show, he is heading up that place on a day-to-day basis, just means so much to me for all the support that he provides us and our total military, total Army. Also, I really liked the series that we did with the Blackjack Brigade, First Cast. That was the AUSA adopted unit, deploying unit. And watching them from, you know, pre-mobilization to actually deploying and deploying to Poland and all the way throughout their holiday time there to their redeployment back home. I think that was great also and was really, really nice to share that experience with them, give them that support from AUSA. Another one, the NBA, Military Basketball Association with Mike Myers. I think that was another great one. And the things that they were doing to help assist with post-traumatic stress syndrome and incorporating basketball and basketball tournaments and all that, you know, team building and esprit de corps that brings around. That was a good one. I remember I almost got drafted. I thought I was going to have to join the team.
And I was ready. There you go.
I was ready. It's another great podcast and great organization doing a lot of things to support the military. And the last one, just because I must, it was the financial bias. Management.
A little bit of bias.
It's all about the money.
All about the money, yes. The financial management podcast, where we talked about how to set good financial plans and really how we can assist our young soldiers, especially coming into the military and experiencing those first-time buys, a house, a car, establishing a family, making sure that they know about these type of issues and how to make the plan for they can be successful early on in their lives and early on in their career. That was another great one.
I teased you about being biased, but that was good. And I'm going to publicly apologize to Lieutenant Colonel Irby here, because when he came on board as the Army Fellow, we kind of threw him in the fire. It was like, all right, we have a podcast series. Let's do it. You know, pick up the mic and let's move forward. But he picked that mic up and he did exceptionally well. So I also enjoyed our time as co-hosts of Army Real Talk. So thank you. Thank you both.
Oh, yeah. He had no choice, man. He had no choice. Even when I was transitioning with him, I was like, hey, man, you're going to be a host of a podcast. He's like, what? And I was like, you'll see when you get here, man. I said, just go ahead and get your speaking voice ready to go. But he jumped into it. He's a champ.
Yes, absolutely.
And Colonel Lloyd's doing well, too. Hey, I have to give props to her. Colonel Lloyd, she's doing very well.
Thank you. Thank
now, I will say it. That she's a little bit more of a quick study than you two gentlemen. No, I'm playing. But now she has this jumped in, and she is on it. So I really appreciate all that she is doing and just how well she is doing hosting. So I thank you, too, man. So, Tizavan, we are about to close things out. I really appreciate you taking the time and just meeting with us so we can have this wonderful conversation and kind of reminisce, but also, very importantly, see what else you are doing currently in the Army so that people continue to be informed. And then a little birdie informed me about something, Major Cooper, about you are up for promotion very soon. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. So yeah, currently promotable. So the way the numbers are hitting right now, so it'll probably be around like 1 March is what I'm looking at.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. I had an exciting time hearing from the two of you. I know Lieutenant Colonel Lloyd enjoyed it as well. And I am just thankful that you were able to join us. So thank you both very much.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.